time for Hartley's CAT Scan, a weekly podcast featuring the who's who of your Prince George Cougars.
And welcome to CAT Scan. It's brought to you by Prince George Office Systems, custom business solutions for your print, scan, and copy needs on the corner of 5th and George. We welcome to the program from Calgary, Quinn Hancock, who holds the Prince George Cougars single season record for goals, 54, and points, 112. And Quinn, obviously, that was a very memorable season. And we're going to have lots of time to talk about scoring 50 goals and getting over 100 points in the WHL. But when you were involved in a game against Seattle, there was an incident that happened that went viral. Don Cherry put on the coach's corner. It was considered one of the all-time hits. And you were on the receiving end, Corey Sarich of the Seattle Thunderbirds. As we go back in time, I'd like you to reminisce with us about that particular game that night, because it was a wicked hit at center ice. Then you were able to get right back up, didn't suffer any concussions miraculously, scored a couple of goals. I think you're a game star. Let's go back, 22 years to that particular game against the Seattle.
Yeah, it was definitely, it just seems like it was my 15 seconds of fame. The funny thing is, I'm actually coaching hockey tonight against Corey Sarich. He's the head coach of the other team. I actually know him pretty well. He lives in Calgary now too. And but anyways, it's funny. It was quite the hit. I remember the play like it was yesterday, and he was kind of going. It seemed like there was a big gap in the neutral zone, and I was just trying to pick up speed. And basically, right when I turned to start picking up speed, I think he saw the play developing and started closing the gap rapidly. And just a big hit. And the funny thing is, when I look back at the hit, there was nothing dirty about it. It was just a clean, hard check. No elbows up or anything. And it's one of the things I miss about hockey nowadays. It seems like every time there's a good hit, somebody just immediately goes over and gets in a fight, and then it kind of dissipates everything. Where back in that time, the game would kind of escalate and things would get pretty physical for 5 or 10 minutes, and the blood would get boiling. Where nowadays it seems like that's kind of gone in hockey. But I didn't know at the time how hard the hit was. Honestly, the next morning Ed Dempsey called me into the room as soon as I got in the rink and said, "You got to see this." And I just thought I kind of got spun around sideways. Didn't realize I basically did a full back flip.
Today, that would be a suspension. Now, I've looked at it. Obviously, you've seen it lots of times. You don't feel that, and you've sort of said you thought at that time it was a clean hit and everything, but it was. It was upper body, close to the head, if not the head of a hit.
I don't know. The way things are now, I get it. But how could, Corey have possibly made the check without hitting my head first? I mean, I was skating really fast and leaning into that direction. My head was the first thing coming. So, I mean, he would have had to have almost, tried to get out of my way to not hit my head. And at that point, it doesn't really seem like it's hockey anymore, if you ask me. I'm not sure how, and I didn't suffer a concussion on the play. I was pretty much fine, a few seconds later. Obviously, it rattled my cage a little bit, but it took me a couple seconds to get my bearings. But, yeah, I honestly just think that's how hockey was, and when we played the game, we all kind of, realized there's a little bit of risk involved.
Now, was that during the 97-98 season where you had the 112 points, or was that the year before?
I'm not sure. I think it was the 70 or 97-98, I believe.
Yeah. How often, we're talking over 20 years later, and of course we started this podcast interview bringing it up. When you talk hockey, how often does this come up? How many times would you say you've had to reminisce or discuss this topic either with members of the public, members of the media, family, ex-teammates? How often does this come up?
It just randomly comes up here and there. I was actually down, the business I own is a franchise, and last week I was down at a conference, and somehow I think one of the franchisees Googled my name, and then that hit came up. Anyways, we're at the conference, and all of a sudden, you know, these people are passing a phone around of showing the hit, and everybody's just like, oh, my God. And that kind of happens. And then same thing, I'll you know, be coaching with some people, and somehow they'll come across it. And Corey Sarich is on the radio now, I think, every week on one of the big radio shows here in Calgary. So sometimes they talk about it as well. And then anybody who knows me comes and, you know, ask me about it if they were listening to the radio show. So I definitely, I seem to hear about it, you know, at least once a month or two.
And what are the discussions you've had in the past with Corey about that? Is it a kind of a thing now you guys laugh about it? Do you look back? Do you think to yourself, boy, I wish I would have had a chance to get you back at some point? Or how is it between the two of you?
Honestly, the funniest thing is the lockout of 2012-13, me and a couple of European pros, we actually skated with the Flames for probably 5 months. So I was skating with Corey like 5 days a week. And honestly, we never talked about it for the longest time. I really didn't. And I honestly, I don't know. It's just not something I thought about bringing up. But anyways, it happened that there was a, I think it was on a radio show again, somebody talked about it, and I actually saw him like a week later, and I said, hey, you know, it's funny, we never really talked about it before. And anyways, yeah, it was nothing. We just kind of had a good chuckle about it. And he actually, you know, made the point that, you know, I'd scored two goals afterwards. So, you know, maybe he just woke me up. But and he actually said, too, that it actually hurt his shoulder. He said for a couple of weeks, his shoulder was kind of messed up. So the odd thing of that is he ended up more shape than I did. But being when you look at the hit, you sure wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, and I was there at the old multiplex at that particular time, and you did have a couple of goals after that hit, and I think you were a game star, if not the first star of that game, weren't you?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think we won the game 4-2, and I had a couple of goals, and like I said, it didn't really, there was really no, aside from just, you know, the getting hit hard and kind of losing your bearings for, you know, a couple seconds, I really had no ill effects. So, and sometimes, you know, I've had coaches over the years that probably would wish that an opponent would do that to me to wake me up a little bit, because I know a lot of coaches they had prefer that I play with, you know, when I'm mad.
Well, 3 years in a Prince George Cougars uniform, 169 games played, 96 goals, 54 of them in 97-98. That 54 is still a record. 100 a total assists for 196 points. So you were a point producer, you were a goal scorer, but you did not start your WHL career in Prince George. Sort of tell us about, take us back to where you're drafted through the Bantam draft. You start with the Rockets, you're Tacoma, Kelowna. I think you had a game with Calgary. I don't know how that worked. You'd only one game there before you come to Prince George. Sort of before coming to Prince George, take us through the process there.
Yeah, so I played Junior A for the Cranbrook Colts, and then I got traded to the Prince George Spruce Kings when I was 16 years old. And actually, prior to that season, I had I went to at that time it was Victoria Cougars training camp, and in the summertime went there, and I think they wanted to put me in the list or whatever you call it at the time. But I'd already committed to going to the Tacoma Rockets main camp that fall. So I didn't sign that. I went to the main camp for the Tacoma Rockets, and they wanted to put me on their list. So I did that. I signed up. I was on their list. And then I went and played, like I said, for Cranbrook Colts, got traded to the Prince George Spruce Kings. And then the following season, I made the Tacoma Rockets team. It was in Tacoma at the time. And played that whole season. They were a really deep team. I think we were second in the league at that time. You know, very good team. So there wasn't a whole bunch of opportunity. And then the following season, they moved to Kelowna. and I wasn't really, you know, hadn't moved up the depth chart that much. And after about, I'm not sure what it was, I can't remember how many games in, 30 games maybe, got traded to Prince George. And Dale Marquette was actually, I think, had just taken over as the head coach. He was my coach with the Prince George Spruce Kings. Had a crazy amount of respect for Dale, and I think he was instrumental in trying to get me there. And, he was a junior A. He was an excellent coach, just a, you know, hard-nosed guy, an honest guy. And so I was really excited about the opportunity to go back and play for him. And unfortunately, he only coached, I think, as an interim coach. He coached the remainder of that season and didn't come back the following season. But that's kind of how I ended up at Prince George. And it was one of those things where I just kind of one of those guys. I just needed an opportunity. And I got that and got some ice time. And coaches trusted in me and, you know, took advantage of the situation.
And then 95-96, you had 16 points in 30 games. 96-97, you picked it up, almost averaging a point a game, 68-70, including 33 goals. Okay, 97-98, that's the year, 69 games, 54 goals, 58 assists, 112 points. How did it all come together that one year, a magic season?
Well, it was really, I think the trajectory started the year before. You know, the first year there where Stan Butler was coaching was the year where really things started to go in the right direction. I improved a lot that year. And then last year, once again, just a ton of opportunity, you know, playing in the first line, power play, pretty much every power play the whole season. And we had a great line. You know, me and Andrew Luciak and Blair Betts had really good chemistry and basically had played together for almost two full seasons. The season before, we had really good chemistry and played together for quite a while. So, you know, that made it easier as well to kind of, you know, you're not hopscotching around from one line to the other. We played together for a long time and Blair was probably the more defensive centerman and took care of that part of the ice. And me and Andrew were more, in charge of getting offense and scoring goals. So that's, you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes, I mean, over the years, it's been no different everywhere I played, you know, in 12 years in Europe and in the minors. Sometimes you just have lines that just work really, really well and have great chemistry. And other places I've been, you'd think you'd have that, and it's just doesn't all come together. But at Prince George, we definitely had a great line, and it worked well.
And, of course, you had the great playoff run in 97. Tell us about that, your vivid memories there.
Yeah, that was really incredible. I mean, anybody that was a part of that and was in the building for those games, they got to experience something that was pretty incredible. And all the years I've played, I've never seen something like that. I mean, I'd be lining up at the faceoff. I think we started just about every game in that stretch, and every single time the team played their first game in Prince George, I'd line up on right wing against their left winger, and their left winger would be like, I cannot believe this. You know, like, are you freaking kidding me? Because we really couldn't even hear the anthem. It was so loud in the building. And I know sometimes you play at home, you have a bit of an advantage, but it was crazy the advantage that we had that year with how loud the fans were. I mean, you know, I can't imagine how many things went our way that otherwise wouldn't have. And just the energy it brought to the players. I mean, we were how could you not be incredibly excited when the fans are that electric?
It was an interesting year because you got off to a great start. As I recall, you went on an Eastern road trip, you struggled, and then at a certain point, it was like, we're not going to try and finish that high in the standings. We're just going to try and get healthy for the playoffs. Chara was injured in that year, and you had a lot of other guys that were banged up. But everything came together in the playoffs. Was that sort of the plan? Is, okay, let's toss aside the regular season. Let's make sure we get in the playoffs, make sure Mason's, you know, raring to go, all this kind of stuff. And then once the playoffs come, we can surprise and knock off teams like Portland that were first place and all that. Was that the mindset back then?
You know, you're exactly right. I think we started, I believe, 7-0 or something, and then we went on that road trip, and we lost all six games. And we had some difficulties, some injuries and stuff, but I don't really think that had a lot to do with it. I think more than anything, we underachieved as a team, and it was just, I know for myself, and I still know some of the guys that we played with on that team, and I think we all knew we were better than we had performed during the regular season, and all 100% knew we were capable of that. You know, I think, you know, Ronald's there, and I think he would probably say exactly the same thing, you know, Ronald Petrovicki. I think we all knew that we had underachieved through the regular season. And, you know, when I remember the team we had, I mean, we had some outstanding hockey players, and it's just, you know, for some reason, and whatever, we had some injuries, but everybody has injuries. I think it's just one of those things where we actually knew deep down what we could do. And, you know, when the playoffs started, everybody just, you know, bared down and started playing. And, I mean, on paper, I honestly think we were, you know, as good as some of those teams we beat out. And maybe some of them had overachieved, you know, in the regular season, where we had underachieved in the playoffs, it did more balanced out.
I know you're a forward and a high scoring forward, but you had Chris Mason play absolutely incredible. And you also had the big three on D with Brewer and Kiwi and Chera. Now there's some other guys as well, but I'm not sure anybody could match that kind of goaltending with those kind of three defensemen that stood out on the team.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think, you know, no playoff team goes anywhere without having great goaltending. And yeah, Mace was, you know, unbelievable. And we were leaning pretty heavily on those three defensemen. And I think that's, it, you know, when we lost out to Seattle, that's probably was a big factor, is that those guys were getting pretty worn down. As a team, you know, we play a lot of hockey, exactly right. You look at you're talking about those names. I mean, we had some outstanding hockey players, and even the other defensemen we have were solid players. It wasn't like they were slouches. I mean, we had some great hockey players, and deep up front, I mean, we were very balanced, where some of those teams we played against, the Portland and I think Spokane was a more balanced team, but Portland was really top heavy. So essentially we just needed to shut down their top, whatever it was, four or five players. And really we were way deeper than them. So if we shut down those first couple of units, we were in really good shape, and that's what we ended up doing.
Well, and you had guys going to the NHL. Chera's still going somehow, not sure how he does it, and Brewer and Betts. So those are guys that just automatically you think of, you know, that went on to the NHL from that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. We had a great team. I heard it, actually, Tampa Bay was, I heard this, John Cooper had said the other day, you know, that last year everybody's coming down hard on Tampa Bay, and they're saying that, you know, maybe John Cooper should lose his job. And he said, well, listen, last year we overachieved, you know, based on the points and stuff, we probably won some games we shouldn't have, and this year it's more balanced. It's more even. We've probably lost some games we should have won. So really, I think that's one of those things where it just hadn't come together in the regular season. But, you know, we all knew what we were capable of. I mean, we have plenty of scoring. And, you know, Petro and I think both had, you know, 30-something goals. And we had, you know, we had lots of guys that could score. So, you know, Luciak was on the team. And so it was just a matter of time. And then, you know, who knew that the fans would have, you know, been like that. It was, I mean, absolutely incredible. I've, you know, any of the guys that played with us and or against us, I would say would never forget that.
I guess even 20 some odd years later, you never get tired about talking about that, right?
No, it was really special. I mean, the next year was pretty crazy as well. But it wasn't to the same level as the year before. I think everybody was just, you know, was just incredibly jacked up. It was just such a fun time. And us as a team, I mean, we were as excited as everybody, right? We were just so pumped to be having success. And every time we showed up at the rink, it wasn't like we were complacent, like, hey, we knocked off Portland. That's good. Let's go home and play some golf. I think we had a strong belief. And even Seattle, like, I think I know we had guys in our team that were already talking about playing Lethbridge, you know, for the West Final, and you know, unfortunately, you know, Seattle came through and was, you know, managed to beat us, but you know, we were in that series as well and could have, you know, if a couple things went our way, we probably could have won that too.
Right. I think Seattle, though, I think they won that in five games, if my memory is correct on that. And I think after you beat Portland, a team that by far finished first, and then you swept Babcock's Spokane Chiefs, I think the expectation then turned around that you guys, you know, and Seattle was really good. They had Marlowe and Nakbar was coaching and all that kind of stuff. But I think from the Prince George end, people are starting to think, hey, if you can beat Portland and sweep Spokane, you should be able to take care of Seattle. So you just think you ran out of steam there?
Well, I mean, it's also, in hindsight, and I don't know if they still do that, the same system they had. I think it's terrible that they actually make you play a round and then they give one team a bye in the second round of the playoffs. You know, like essentially Seattle was resting for, you know, whatever it was, a week straight while we're, you know, going to war with Spokane Chiefs. And, you know, even though we won all three games, they were unbelievable battles all those games. You know, so yeah, it kind of seemed like, you know, we actually lost to Seattle in six games. I remember that because they beat us the final game on our ice.
Right.
And in that game, I remember it was just like, it almost seemed like we didn't quite have the juice that we normally had, you know. And you know, like I said, they were basically resting for a week and just getting prepared for us while we're going to war, playing three, you know, really hard-fought games against Spokane. I don't know if the league still has that same.
No, it's changed. They don't do that anymore. Nobody's getting that kind of a break or bye. They probably saw the light and realized it was just simply too much of an advantage. You're listening to CatScan. Yeah. It's brought to you by Prince George Office Systems, custom business solutions for your print, scan, and copy needs on the corner of 5th and George. We're speaking with Quinn Hancock, the single-season goal-scoring record holder for the PG Cougars with 54 and point total with 112. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's something I still think about and was really, really proud of the accomplishment. You know, I think my first, you know, the first couple of years there where I, you know, was having a tough time even, you know, cracking the top nine in Tacoma and Kelowna, I knew what I was capable of and was just really, you know, hoping for the opportunity to be able to show what I was capable of. So, that's why going to Prince George gave me that opportunity and very proud of it. You know, I still, when I look back, that season offensively was probably the best season I ever had. I mean, I had some good seasons as well in Europe and some other good seasons as well. But I mean, for just pure offense, that year was pretty exceptional. I recall just thinking almost everything I was shooting had a chance to go in. And I actually pivoted early on in my professional career. I actually pivoted to playing center. And at that point, you know, basically was playing a more all-around game, you know, where I was more of a two-way centerman. And so, you know, when I had that season, I was basically more relied on for offense because Betsy was, you know, Blair Betts was essentially taking care of a lot of the defensive responsibilities. So gave me and Andrew some freedom to play more offensive.
Now, I know record holders get asked this all the time, and I know what the politically correct answer is, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Your record has withstood more than 20 years. You sort of think in the back of your mind you'd like to see it another 20 years, nobody can break that record?
I honestly think that the game has kind of changed a little bit as well. And then, you know, the trap came in and these different defensive systems and schemes came into hockey. So I honestly think that there's been some players in Prince George that probably might have had a chance to beat that, you know, in that 20-year span. But just the way that the league has trended has probably made that challenging. I do know, of course, there's been some players for other teams that have been over – you know, 100 and whatever, 120, 30 points. But you don't see the numbers that you saw. Like, I mean, Darcy Tucker, I think the one year at 150 or 60, and Dominic Kelly and some of those guys were getting really, really high point totals. I haven't paid attention too much, but I think it is, from what I understand, it's been a bit more defensive over the years. But that'll all change, right? Eventually there'll be another change, and they might change the rules or something, and I'm totally fine with it. I'm excited for whoever finally does break it. You know, eventually all rules or all records get broken, so.
Would it be something that if somebody gets to 53 within a goal, or they get to 110 within 2 points, that you would start to follow it and make sure that you'd congratulate that person and really, you know, pay attention at that particular time so that that particular record gets its just due?
Well, I hope somebody lets me know. But yeah, I would definitely call him and congratulate him. It's certainly, like I said, it's not like it's a crazy number, you know. Many guys have scored over 50 goals and, you know, a lot more than 54. And, you know, tons of guys have scored more than 112 points too. So, you know, eventually it's going to get broken without a doubt. And I'd be, you know, absolutely more than happy to call the guy and congratulate him. It's you know, no matter what, it's an accomplishment. I mean, it's a good league. It's a great league. And it's certainly not something that's easy to do.
Well, Fiddler got to 50, and that was a few seasons back, and he got to 50 by scoring 4 in the last game of the season on home ice, so that was quite an accomplishment for him to get that far. And, of course, that team, you know, struggled on the ice, didn't get a lot of wins, unlike the team that you played on that was a winning team, and I think it's a little bit easier to get goals and points on more offensive-minded teams that have some success.
Yeah, sometimes, and I mean, it kind of goes, I've been on teams too that just have a, you know, or where, I know I played on a team in Sweden where it seemed like just our line was the line that scored, you know, and we were really heavily relied upon, and sometimes they leave us on the ice for almost the whole 2 minutes of the power play, so there's, you know, of course that was a big advantage. It's almost like, you know, there's a couple of NHL teams that are doing that now where they're leaving the one power play. Like the Edmonton Oilers basically leave that one line on the ice for almost a whole 2 minutes for most power plays. So, I mean, usually, but if, of course, if you have a good team overall and you have, you know, you're all, you know, say 4 or 5 of your defensemen, passing defensemen, of course, all those things make it easier to produce offense for sure.
All right, a very successful career in Prince George, but then you had a lengthy career after junior hockey. Sort of take us through the many years that you played, where you ended up, and how things went over that 12 or 14-year period beyond hockey in Prince George.
Yeah, so I actually, I signed with St. Louis Blues after that final season of junior and went to their camp, ended up playing in their system for just the first year, and I had a strange fracture in my foot called a Jones fracture. I broke a bone in January, and essentially I missed the whole rest of the season, and it's a really long recovery period with that injury. And so at the end of the year, St. Louis Blues, they had an option to pick up my contract for 2 more years. They declined it, and so after that I played. Actually, I played on Andrew Luciak's team. He called me and got me onto his team that following year. And I played basically half that season, and then I went up to the that season I played a mix of with the Manitoba Moose and then on Andrew's team. And then the following season I started on that same team with Andrew Luciak, and then got called up after like 15 games and played the rest of the season in the AHL for Rochester Americans. And had a really good season. You know, I didn't play power play almost the entire year, but Randy Cunnyworth, the coach, really liked using me as kind of a shutdown centerman. And considering the role I was in and the I thought I had a, you know, pretty good year, and my agent did too. And anyways, we didn't really have that much interest the next year. So we had an opportunity in Europe.
and took that opportunity. And so I ended up, all told, I played 3 years in Germany, 6 years in Finland, and then 1 year in Sweden, 1 year in Austria, and then 1 year in Denmark. Towards the end of my career in those last two places. But yeah, it was the hockey in Finland, in particular is probably the closest to, the North American game, but just really fast. I mean, everybody over there in Finland and Sweden, everybody's a good skater and really fast hockey, which was pretty exciting. I enjoyed playing that hockey.
Imagine there was nobody that was going to give those Corey Sarich type of hits there in Finland.
Well, no, actually, Finland had some pretty aggressive guys, and that's what I mean. It's probably the closest to North America for the style of play. But it is funny, the lockout year, we had a couple North American guys come over, and actually Tyler Bauk was one of them. He played for Turku, and I remember the one game he hit me a couple times, and you know, it was a North American hit where you really follow through and almost, you know, hit the guy as hard as you can. And told him after the game, I said, it's been a while since I've been hit like that, where the guy actually, you know, really tries to paste you. But yeah, there's plenty of Finns that play a really aggressive game. I mean, we had the 1 year, we had like three fighters on our team. So it's definitely a different game. You know, in Sweden, you almost never see fights. And in Germany, same thing. There was lots of North Americans in Germany, but a lot of those guys were more skilled players, that weren't really playing a super aggressive physical game. So Finland was probably the most physical of any of the leagues I played in Europe.
Just going back to your minor career, you talked about playing with Andrew Lusick. I think that was in Muskegon, was it?
Yeah, that's right.
Right, okay. So all those years in Europe, and then it sort of came to an end for you in, what, 2012, 2013. Talk about the end for you and what you have done since the playing career.
Yeah, so the last, it was pretty close to the end of my career. I mean, every year, unfortunately for me, the biggest asset I had was my skating ability and that... For me, I know some players I see, like, you know, you saw Teemu Selänne, it seemed like he was as fast at 42 as he was when he was in his 20s. And for me, I started to get slower, you know, every year. And when I was even in like 33, 34. So I started looking at other options and started to figure out what I was going to do after hockey. And actually, the year that I was, the lockout was happening, a lot of us European pros, we weren't getting jobs because, you know, a lot of the NHL players had gone over to Europe to keep playing. And so I was skating with the Flames that year. Anyways, I looked into this franchise, business opportunity. There was actually Dennis Mullen is one of the guys who was one of the guys I leaned on or talked to about, what to do after the playing career, because he had obviously transitioned several years earlier.
And just for the listeners, he's another former Prince George Cougar.
That's right, yeah. And so he, and I know him, he lives in Calgary as well. Still play hockey against him in men's league quite often and keep in touch. And so he's actually the guy that kind of gave me the idea to buy my own business. I'd had lots of offers to go into the oil industry and the sales. And tons of ex-pro hockey players do that. They go into the oil industry in Alberta, but you know, it didn't really seem like a great fit for me at the time, and so I looked into what companies are for sale, so this franchise opportunity came up, and we actually bought the franchise the fall of 2012, and then through that winter, I mean, it's a seasonal business, it's actually in concrete repair, so the winter, we really didn't really do much aside from get ready for the following spring to actually kick the business off. So I went and played. I actually went and played after the lockout ended. I went to in Germany to play the last, whatever it was, 2 months. And it was kind of funny. The team I was on went bankrupt about a month after I got there. And so it was a complete circus. I think our team was actually made the playoffs, but we weren't allowed to play because our team had gone bankrupt. It was really bizarre situation. But
must have been those high. It must have been those high salaries you guys got.
Yeah. Not on that team.
No.
But yeah, it was really really strange. And anyways, in Germany, it's a pretty common occurrence for teams to go bankrupt. And we had several guys in our team that had been through it like three or four times already. And anyways, so that was, for me, that was kind of the end of the line. The last three or four games of the season, we had more imports than you could actually play. And I just told the coach, I said, listen, just, you know, play the other guys and I'll just sit out because, you know, it's going to be my last year. So, but anyways, yeah, that was it for playing. And since then I've gone on with this business and it's been it's been a real exciting thing for me to, you know, a new challenge. I love challenges and that's kind of what I've just kept doing and building this business. We started off with just, we bought the franchise rights for Alberta and then we expanded and bought BC and since then bought Saskatchewan, Manitoba, owned quite a bit of Ontario and just continued building the business.
So what's the nuts and bolts of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis then being in charge there?
Yeah, I mean, now I'm essentially, I have been for several years the president of the company. So, at the start, it was, of course, a small company, and I was on the tools and building it up. But now it's kind of grown where we have salespeople to manage and so it's a concrete repair company. And so it's just slowly grown over the years. And now I'm more in a management role in the company for sure.
Well, you're early 40s and you're settled in Calgary and that really is looking at your future. I heard you say that you still go out there with the guys and play some rec hockey.
Yeah, no, it's funny. After I finished playing the first year, I wanted nothing to do with playing hockey. I think I didn't even touch my equipment for almost 12 months. Or maybe even 18. I didn't play for quite a while. But then I started playing men's hockey on my brother's team. And, it's a good league here in Calgary. There's quite a few ex-professionals and everybody's out there having a good time and it's still competitive. But not, you know, none of the foolish stuff. You don't see it very often. I think actually Dennis Mullen just got into a pretty good dust up the other night for the first time in a while. But I mean, that's just true to his character, but he's actually, but anyways, yeah, it's fun. I really enjoy it. It's just the things you miss about hockey. I mean, it's just being around the guys and going out and competing and then, just having a good time afterwards. So, I definitely enjoy it. I want to keep doing it as long as I'm able to.
Well, I know you like to come back when you can for the golf tournament in the summer. And I guess that just gives you an opportunity to, see some of the former teammates and some of the other ex-Cougars and reminisce and just share some of those stories. What's it like sort of when you come back or you're talking to these guys? Like, what is sort of the main topics that you guys look at? Is it about the on ice? Is it about the travel? What is it that when you guys sort of get together, you say, oh, yeah, I remember this, and it was such a great time?
You know, when I look back at all the, I guess it'd be almost 20 years in total with my junior career, those years to me were the most memorable of all the years, the my most, those guys are the closest, the guys that I played with in Prince George, a lot of those guys are the guys that I keep in touch with more than any guys I played, pro with over the years. And it's just such a special time, you don't have all the responsibilities, you're not a professional yet. You're trying to get there and achieve that. But, I think it's just, guys are just having fun and competing hard and it's there's nothing, some of the things in pro hockey, you start to see guys competing against each other a lot more and it gets a little bit cutthroat at times and where in junior, there's a little bit of that, but at the same time, I think we were all just pulling for one another and just playing hard and playing our butts off. And I just honestly, there's a bunch of guys like Chris Peterson and Tyler Bauk and Mike Kiesman and Tyler Bruff and some of those guys. I just love getting back there and chatting with them. And it's really funny, 22 years or whatever it is since I was there playing with those guys. And it's just incredible how when I see them again, it's like it was just yesterday. You know, we can just start chatting and ribbing each other like it was just yesterday. The only problem is if we start having drinks, it's not the same as it was 22 years ago, and our hangovers last a week. But yeah, it's an awful lot of fun getting together with those guys. There's a lot of guys just have a great amount of respect for. And like I said, I tell, you know, all those kids, that the junior kids, that they'll probably have the most fun they will ever have in their careers for the kids that are going to go on and play pro and such. Those junior years are really special. And like I said, for me, so many memories.
Other than going out and playing some rec hockey, do you have desires to stay in the game in terms of coaching or anything like that, or is that not you?
You know, this year I finally started head coaching one of my sons, and I really enjoy the head coaching aspect. As an assistant coach, you know, I've done that for 3 or 4 years with our sons, and didn't really, you know, you don't really have much say in what's going on, and you're really just pushing pucks around. But the head coaching has definitely been fun. I do have a bunch of friends. You know, one guy on my men's league team, he actually coaches the junior A team, and another good friend of mine coaches against him in the same Alberta Junior Hockey League. And you know, I don't think I really would have the desire to get back in and do that. And especially considering just the volatility of coaching. My wife's brother is actually works for the Phoenix Coyotes as a skills coach as well. And yeah, it's just I really like what we're doing. We're settled here, you know, the kids are happy and I love what I'm doing. I'm really, as long as I keep challenging myself and I'm more than happy what we're doing and I still love hockey. And you know, if any of those guys ever, you know, considered asking me to help assistant coach them, you know, I may possibly think about it. But I certainly don't want to get into, you know, coaching full time. It's not something that really interests me, just because of, you know, how volatile it is.
Yeah. How old is your son that you're coaching? What age bracket?
We have two sons. The oldest one's 11, and so he's first year peewee. So,
what are the challenges coaching an 11-year-old team when the sun is on it?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably more challenging for him because, of course, I'm harder on him than anybody. But in Calgary you can only coach your son until Pee Wee, I think it is. They have kind of different rules. I know when I was a kid, you know, they played in small towns, so you can't afford to, you know, have you know, that type of a system. There's just not enough coaches. But yeah. It's fine. I mean, I certainly don't give him any special treatment. I'll say that. If anything, it's the opposite. You know, I make him earn everything and I really don't think with the coach guys I coach with, there's really nothing. You know, everybody plays the same way and coaches all the kids pretty much the same way. So it's been great. They have a good, we have a really good hockey association here. In Springbank, in the Calgary, we were in the Springbank Association, and there's probably a whole bunch of, there's several ex-professional coaches here.
Well, I appreciate your time and going back memory lane and everything like that, and all the best to you, Quinn.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Quinn Hancock holds the PG Cougars record for goals in a season with 54, points in a season with 112, and you've been listening to CatScan. Brought to you by Prince George Office Systems, custom business solutions for your print, scan, and copy needs on the corner of 5th and George.